would be my cardboard testimony in the kingdom of heaven to those. And this is what my testimony is.
Like a hurricane, I am a tree bending beneath the weight of His wind and mercy. And all of a sudden, I am unaware of these afflictions eclipsed by glory. And I realize just how beautiful You are and how great Your affections are for me. And oh, how He loves us so. Oh, how He loves us. How He loves us so. So heaven meets earth like a sloppy wet kiss, and my heart turns violently inside of my chest. I don't have time to maintain these regrets when I think about the way that He loves us.
That's at least the sixth time I've watched that, and I can't either. it's just awesome, isn't it? And I mean, I don't know about you, but don't you think the cross was enough? I mean, like, the cross is just awesome, and you think, oh, well, that, you know, he's done his job, he's shown us he loves us, he's done the cross, and then he just carries on. He just carries on doing more. And love and restoring marriages and healing the wounds that are created by abuse or bereavement. And oh my goodness. So, yeah. And I love the fact that we focused on God's love and the cross in the first half. And now that. And I started thinking about this sermon, thinking about God's love. And then we went on Soul Survivor and just His love, just all week. It was just being sort of bathing in His love, meditating on how awesome His love is. And so I feel like we need we're stopping there now, though. And now we're going to talk. We're not really stopping there, because you can never really stop there, can you? You can never really stop talking about it. But we're going to talk about our response to His love. And I looked at Mary and Martha. This is where I started. And I'll just read it. It's from Luke, I think, although I haven't got that written down. I've got nothing but the verse 38. I don't know what chapter it is either, sorry. As Jesus and His disciples. House, because we know she's got a brother called Lazarus, but it seems like Martha's the head of the house, doesn't it? But Mary was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to Him and said, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset by many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." We had, around Easter time, it wasn't Easter itself, but near there, we did an all-age event. And we used Mary and Martha then as well. And since we did that, it hasn't left me, the Mary and Martha thing. God keeps reminding me about Mary and Martha. Because naturally, I'm a Mary. I would really much rather just sit at Jesus' feet. In fact, I was reminded of a song this morning that we don't sing very often. here, but we used to in the church I was growing up, to be in his presence, to sit at his feet, where your love surrounds me and makes me complete. This is my desire, O Lord. This is my desire. And it really is. That's me. That's me in a nutshell. And that's my idea of heaven as well. I think when we get to heaven, and this is just my opinion, because we'll never know till we get there. I think we're just going to look at God for eternity. I think we're just going to, this is how I imagine it. We're just going to be with God. We're going to see him face to face. We'll be like him. How that works, I don't know. We will, we're just going to be with him. Just looking at him, singing to him, relating to him. That's my idea of heaven. And I could do that. I love this verse because this is Jesus saying that that's right. Well done, Rosie. You're fine. You can do that. So if this was all the Bible was, I'd be very happy. Unfortunately, that bit comes immediately after the story of the Good Samaritan, which of course is all about loving people by doing. And there's all sorts of other bits here that I could read about, and I probably will in a minute, about loving by doing. And particularly the one that always worries me a bit is the one about the sheep and the goats. and I'll just read a bit of it. Matthew 25, and he's saying at the end of time, we're going to separate everyone and we're going to be like sheep on one side and goats on the other, and he'll turn to the sheep and say, well done, when I was hungry you fed me, when I was thirsty you gave me something to drink, when I was in prison or sick you visited me, when I was naked you clothed me, and all those things. And they'll say to him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick and in prison and visit you? The king will reply, I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. And I think this is really important. And there's other bits we can look at in the Bible as well. But thinking about acceptable worship, you see, when we're doing this to be in your presence, sit at your feet, and when we're thinking about the cross and these amazing things he does because he loves us, I get, and I think lots of people do, to this point of, I can't reach high enough. And there was this, another really fantastic song at Soul Survivor, I can't sing loud enough, I can't sing loud enough when I'm singing for you. And I can't bow low enough. I can't bow low enough at the vision of you. And I can't reach high enough when I'm. I can't lift my hands high enough when I'm reaching for you. And it reminded me of the one that the Powells taught us this year. I can't hop around the room enough. I can't. You know, Bethy loves that one. And I wanted to start singing that. But anyway, but there is this feeling in us. We can't repay this debt. That was another song we sang today. There's this debt of love. He's loved us so much. He's done such amazing things. The perfect life dying for us. And then all this as well. He's provided for us. He is continually healing us. He is continually, just lavishing his love on us. And so we can't repay this debt. And there's something in us that wants to repay this debt, you know. So God says, do it for the least of these. And when Jesus was visiting some Pharisees and having dinner in their home, he said to the host, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, don't invite your friends or your brothers or relatives or your rich neighbours. If you do, then they may invite you back and then you'll have been repaid. Instead, when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. So basically, God says, you can't really give me anything, because I gave you everything anyway. Everything you have is a gift from me. Your skills, your money, your everything, your health, you know, it comes from God. You can't repay me. So don't even try. But when you want to, because you will want to, and by caring about justice and doing something about justice and the poor. And so by looking after those people I love, who are, he loves like as much as he loves us, and he's put his image in those people. Those people are precious, and they are looking like God, and as important to God as we are. So he's saying, so when you worship me, do it by looking after those people. And this is something God's been doing with me with the Mary Martha thing, because I am naturally a Mary and would much rather do that. And being in this church, it's kind of a Martha church, I always think, you know, with the Woodlands and whatnot. We like to do things for people to show God's love. And so God's put me in this Martha church. He's married me to a Martha man. John is my son. Paul is my husband. Paul is a Martha, you know, naturally. You know, we have these personality types. People have sort of described us as being extrovert or introvert and this sort of thing. But I think we have a worship type. We've done some work in the past on spiritual pathways and how some people feel close to God when they serve, and some people feel close to God when they read about him, and singing or being with the trees like me, or you know, all these different spiritual pathways. And we all have our easiest one to get, you know, to feel close to God. And there's also these love languages, isn't there? If you've ever read the marriage book, which is a really, is that what it's called? It is, isn't it? Yeah. Which goes with the marriage course. Yeah. And it had these love languages. Is it five? I probably can't remember them all. One of them is touch and physical affection. One is doing things for people. And that's Paul's major. And he is forever doing things for me. Unfortunately, that's quite low down on my list. and mine is probably more like words. I feel loved when I have words of encouragement, you know. And unfortunately, Paul is not a poet. You know, he's quite far from being a poet. And so our whole marriage, it's good that we understand these things, because we're always having to remind each other that it's great that you're loving me like that, but, you know, I need this and that sort of thing. And so it's really great to understand these things, isn't it? And I think in the worship languages, there's this Mary and Martha as well. You know, some of us would much rather sit at Jesus' feet and sing to him and pray, and some of us would much rather do, yes, Lord, thank you for doing that. I'm going to show you how much I love you by doing. And can we have a... Dave Hall's talked a while ago now, and I looked it up. It's over a year ago, because it's not on the website anymore. He talked about the blue and the yellow dimensions and how Jesus was the perfect green. Were you here when he did that? You were, but maybe that was just around the time you... Okay, so, but I know lots of other people here weren't, so... Yes. Can I have orange?
Yeah.
Thank you. Excellent. Okay, so the blue is this way, and... And so this is our outwards one. And I... with people, and I like to be with people. So this is fine for me, and talking about God is all fine for me. And I'm fine with doing things. But really, it's not my primary worship language. Wouldn't be the horizontal direction, going to people, you know. So it's probably not my... primary way of loving God, anyway. Although, as I say, I think it would be for Paul. Now, imagine this is yellow. It's not. It's orange. And then we have the yellow. And this is your time with God, your quiet time, you're reading the Bible, you're singing, you're praying, all those things. And that's where I feel intimate with God, anyway. That's where I feel most intimate. And I can do all these things, but for me, this is about God. When I'm doing, telling people about God, sharing how much I love him, sharing how much he's loved me, these blue things, that's all, for me, that works out much more about being about God. Do you see what I mean? Where for some people, I think Andy is here, aren't you, really? You feel close to God when you're with people, when you're with unchurched people often. You've said this before, and actually you find it hard in church on Sundays rather, doing the singing. You don't really feel so close. It's not your bag. Is that right? Yeah. So people are different, and that's fine, and that's great. But so this is where I've been anyway. And what Dave was saying was when he brought this to us the first time, yellow and blue make green. Just not in felt tip pen. He did it with paint, didn't he? When he did it. And so Jesus was the perfect green. Jesus stayed inside this box, basically. Not all the time. I mean, he did go up on the mountain, didn't he, to be on his own with God. In fact, the Bible often talks about Jesus being on his own with God, wanting to go and be away from the crowds. But Jesus was really good at this green thing. And I feel this is where he's bringing me towards recently. And it's because I've been doing the blue. It's through doing the blue, even when I didn't really want to. So of serving people. In fact, serving one particular person and getting a bit fed up of it and thinking, can they not sort this out themselves now? You know, and that, you know, that was human, isn't it? And I felt quite strongly the presence of God, or at least the voice of Jesus. And I imagine him having just come off the cross, actually, and saying, God, I'm really tired. Can I have a cheese sandwich? Which is what I was doing. And I said, yes, of course you can. Whoops. Oh, yes, you did the cross for me, and I can make you a cheese sandwich. So all of a sudden, from doing this blue thing that I was doing more out of obedience, and obedience is good, and obedience is actually how we get close to God, isn't it? Because Jesus said, if you're my friend, you'll do what I say. So through obedience, I suddenly had this revelation moment that actually this is worship, because this is what he's asked me to do for him. And when he says, whenever you did these things to the least of my brothers, you did for me, he means it. You know, he actually means, if you love me, you will love them. If you love me, you will love the poor. If you love me, you will love people who are too stupid to help themselves, you know, when you feel that way about them. People who, for whatever reason in their life, have been too broken to be in a place of providing for themselves, or through injustice, you know, which is what most poor people are suffering from, injustice, really. So that was before Soul Survivor, but during Soul Survivor, I've really felt... there was a lot of talking about the poor. Oh, no, I haven't got my notebook. In my notebook, I've written three things that were my takeaways from Soul Survivor. Oh, how he loves us was the first one. What were they? This notebook I bought at Soul Survivor was made by a woman rescued from prostitution. And in this manufacturing factory that's in one of the big cities in India. It's a charity who's set up a factory for women to escape from prostitution, to provide them with dignity and work. And so I've got this, and I've written on it in what it is. So every time I have it, and also this bag I have with me, same thing. This is dignity for a woman. I'm not for sale, no one should be. That was the other big thing that was a lot of Soul Survivor. So have I got the three? No, so there was, oh, how he loves us. Something, I'm not for sale, no one should be. And something else in the middle now. Can't remember. Where was that?
The right to believe?
No. But I bought this book as well at Soul Survivor, and this is what I've been doing since Soul Survivor. So it's only a week we've been home. I've been reading this book, Just Imagine, and it's written by a fabulous woman called Danielle Strickland, and I don't know. But Danielle Strickland is a Salvationist, and she preached a really fiery sermon about people who are going out for God and tackling injustice and tackling the dark powers of the spiritual world as they're affecting us, you know. So working in slums, and she was talking about how Oh, she's named her son Judah, after a Judah somebody or other who was called the Hammer of the Lord. So she talked a lot about the Hammer of the Lord and got everyone to say, every time she said the hammer, no, it's hammer time, everyone say, bam, bam. It was good, wasn't it? It was good. Anyway, so the Hammer of the Lord, bam, bam. It's hammer time, bam, bam. And she talked about, like, this 16-year-old salvationist at the end of the 19th century who'd been called to America, 16-year-old girl who'd been called to America, which was, you know, lawless, and went to a bar and stood on a table and sang Amazing Grace. And, you know, and started with the jeering and this sort of thing. And by the end of it, the whole bar was silent and they all gave their life to the Lord. It's like she decided it's hammer time, you know. And bang, bam. So anyway, so that's this woman. And she, you know, she's been there and done those things as well. And she's been sitting behind dumpsters with druggies. And had this, in fact, one particular one she talked about in the sermon, then come back to her house and be prayed for and manifest a demon, which then was left her. And then she slept for 3 days on her living room floor. And this is a woman who had children, her own children in her house. And this druggie sleeping for 3 days on her living room floor. And yeah, it's hammer time. You know, this is like serious gospel stuff. Anyway, this book is all about poverty and injustice and stop the traffic and all those things. I'm about halfway through, as you can see, and we're just getting to what we can do about it. But it's just awful how basic, you know, how extreme poverty, like the sort of poverty that Anna was talking about, the ladies in Nepal dealing with, where they've been abandoned by their husbands and they're already in a poor country. And this one woman that really, I was listening to it again on the web this week, Anna talking about visiting this lady who is new to their organisation, whose children are malnourished and have this glassy stare, and how the baby, the two-year-old, had some rice and dal while they were there and had all there was and was still crying for more because it wasn't satisfying him because there wasn't the right nutrients. And Danielle points out in the book that kind of poverty, it stops people responding to God in the way that we should, you know. It stops people, and it robs them of the, or at least, it is allowed to happen because people don't believe that these people are made in the image of God. And so, if you're a businessman and you're going to work, and you're working with poor people are working for you, you will allow them to be paid less than a living wage if you don't believe that they're made in the image of God. And if you're going to traffic someone, that's because you don't believe that they're made in the image of God, you know. And if really, if you did, if you thought that they were, then you wouldn't treat people that way. In fact, if you think about what that means, the image of God, if you think, years ago now, actually, it's all five again, somebody preached something that just stuck with me. We don't make idols of our God. God said, you mustn't make idols. We don't make images of our God, like a statue. God said, don't do that. And he said that because he's already made lots of them. He's made images of God. And how would you treat an image of God if you had if we were people who worshipped statues or had at least we didn't say that that was the statue, sorry, that the statue was God, but perhaps that we related to it as if it was God. We wouldn't put it on the floor under a table. We keep it on the table. You know, you wouldn't let it get dirty. Those sorts of things. So if we're actually relating to each other as the image of God, if we're actually caring for each other as we would care for something that's sacred, then that's another big step on. And that's the step that takes us into this green. Because when I'm relating to God this way, that's because I believe he's God. when I'm relating to people here and I'm not feeling like I'm actually being intimate with God while I'm doing that, that's because I don't think that they're God. Which, of course, you're not God. But do you know what I mean? But when we're here in the green, that's when we've realised that God wants us to relate to other people as if they were him. And so when... And that's, and I'm guessing there now with my children. Weeks ago, June or July, Dave said something about how maybe being a parent would be easier if you actually believed that your children were like Jesus, like you should treat your children like you would treat Jesus. And it was the next day we had a core team meeting, and I'd had a really frustrating day with my kids, and. And I said to him, I've been thinking about that all day. And actually, if Jesus was as stupid as my children, I'd be cross with him as well. I think it'd been one of those days where they just were hurting themselves all the time. And you just want to say, just sit still and stop hurting. Things are changing in me, and maybe when they are hurting themselves or whatever, rather than that they are Jesus, but that Jesus has said, if you love me, you will be nice to your children. If you, you know, if you want to worship me, you will look out, you know, this is how you do it. You are lovely to children. You look after children and the poor. And in James 2, verse 14, it says, what good is it, my brothers, if a man claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save him? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to him, go, I wish you well, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about his physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, is not if not accompanied by action, is dead. Which is very worrying when we're saved by faith. Where is that? Ephesians 2. For it is by grace that you are saved through faith. Is it Hebrews is what's going on about how we're saved by faith? And it's faith that is credited you as righteousness. Without faith, you can't. Without faith, you can't please God. It's by grace that we've been saved through faith. And even the faith doesn't come from us. The faith is not yours. It's not from yourselves. It's the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. So, actually, what that's saying is that even the faith that has saved us is given to us by God. So, how he loves us. But if faith without works is dead, then that's really worrying, isn't it? And Jesus said, if you're my friend, you'll do what I ask you to do. So, where was I going there? Faith without works is dead. Good Samaritan. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. Right, that's right. I just want to finish with this. In Matthew 6, verse 1, be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honoured by men. I tell you the truth, for they have received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So, and it reminds me about and praying as well. He says a similar thing about praying, doesn't he? He says don't pray on the street corner with lots of words so that everyone's very impressed with how very long prayers you can make. But go into your room and shut the windows and pray, because it's about you and God. And with that, we can see, oh yes, that's obvious. We pray by ourselves because we're just talking to God. And that makes sense. And he's sort of saying the same thing. He's making a direct comparison. When you give, when you serve people, don't do it in public. Do it in private, because it's not about you and people. In fact, if you can make it so the person who you're blessing doesn't even know, what you're doing, then that's even better. Because it's about you and God. It's your worship. So I wanted to say, don't do it if it's not out of worship. Do you see what I mean? Because that's the sort of key that... But I don't think I should say that, because I was doing it and then it became worship. And actually sometimes obedience first, then it becomes... Do you know what I mean? So, and you still do it even if you don't feel it. Because it's not about our emotions, it's about God and what God said to do. So if you want to start getting involved with... I'm sure we'll talk about this more, actually, about the whole poverty thing, because and the trafficking, because I think we've all been impacted by that, and the youth have as well. Of course, Donna was ahead of us on all this. Reading this book, I've been thinking, oh, I bet Donna knows about that already. and there's websites that tell you where the ethical things, where you can buy ethically and how you can buy ethically. Because actually slavery, not just slavery into prostitution, which is what I always think about when I think about trafficking. And at that point I think, well, there's not much I can do about that because I'm not a purchaser in the sex industry. And so I can't buy ethically that way, if you see what I mean. Or I sort of already am, as it were. do you know what I mean? By not doing it. Yes. Just for the record.
I'm sure you can buy ethically.
Well, no. Other than what I was thinking was getting married and staying in that relationship. That's how I'm. My sex is ethical. yes. Quit. Yes. Open mouth. Remove foot. You got it. But I hadn't realised until Soul Survivor, I hadn't realised the extent to which our food and clothes may have been produced by slaves. Because there's so much of it about, and I couldn't see why there would be so, you know, and actually that it's poverty that creates slavery, because people are, you know, so poor they're willing to go with someone to the promise of work, or they're so poor they will accept a year's worth of food in order to allow their eldest daughter to go off with this nice man who's promising work in a restaurant. And if you know, if you've got a family of six to feed and you can't afford to feed them, and they're all malnourished and crying every night, every day, because they're hungry, and someone promises, you know, this Western man with a nice smart suit promises to take her to a hotel or a restaurant where she's going to work and be cared for and pay you her wages, it's a really, really impossible decision to make. And so it makes you feel very powerless as well. I don't know if that's happened to you yet. That's how we felt. I felt a lot listening to all this about slavery. There are things we can do. We can, you know, we can try and buy ethically, ask where our clothes are coming from, as well as asking where our food is coming from. And we can lobby MPs and so on, which is all really good. But it just occurred to me, or at least God said to me again this week, the Soul Survivor, actually praying is really important. Praying for these people, and you know, when the Israelites cried out in their oppression, in their slavery, God heard them and rescued them. After one of these seminars about slavery, I prayed, and I got really cross with God. Why do I have to pray? You care about these people. Why can't you just do this already? And we don't understand how the technology of prayer works. Which is a phrase Dave's used before about healing, because we know that God wants to heal us, and we know that God wants to free the oppressed, but he's asked us to do it as well. But there's something powerful about prayer. So this is something else that's come out, that God's been doing with me recently, as well as making me a bit more green. I've just been reminded about prayer. So every time I pick up my bag that was made by this woman who was rescued from prostitution, or use my notebook, I'm praying a blessing on her and women like her, and praying for their freedom. Right. So I think that's where we'll stop. Should we just pray? Lord, thank you for the way you love us. Thank you for the amazing thing you did on the cross, which really should be enough for us. But thank you that you don't just leave us there. It's not like getting married and then never telling us that you love us. But you tell us every day that you love us, and you show us, and you give us things, and you touch us, and you are with us, Lord. And thank you that you loved us, Lord, and you've given us everything we need, and you've provided for us. And Lord, I pray for the poor now, that they're desperately poor in the world, that you will feed them, Lord, and that you will send people to clothe them, and that you will help us and speak to us individually as to how you would like each of us to act justly, love mercy, and walk with you. Amen. Fair trade coffee is now available. I believe.